be allowed back in the United States. Her attorney, Charles Swift, reacts to the decision.
The judge found the risk to her for waiting was speculative. But it's very important that what the judge also found. On the first prong, are we likely to succeed? He found that, yes, we are very likely to succeed in the final, our motion and in our final complaint.
That audio courtesy of Fox News, and Hillary Clinton says she's not running for president in 2020. At least that's what she told a local TV station in New York City. This is USA Radio News.
Let's have a chat about your debit card, the card you use for the things you buy every day. What if you could get cash back every time you bought those things? Well, now you can. Introducing Discover Cashback Debit. Just open a Discover bank account and start earning 1% cash back on up to $3,000 in debit card purchases every month automatically. Plus, there are no monthly fees or minimum balances. Now you can get cash back on the way you like to pay. Open a Discover bank account and get the debit card with cash back. Go to discoverbank.com/debit. Limitations apply. Excludes money market accounts. Discover Bank member FDIC.
The NASCAR Goes West Series continues this week in Phoenix at ISM Raceway. Now, last week, the guys were racing at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. I was up there at the track interviewing some folks, and I had a chance to catch up with Detroit Lions offensive tackle Tyrell Cosby. Now, he's a big guy, and I had a chance to talk to him about his impressions. This was his first NASCAR event.
It's been crazy, really, just to actually be down here and see how everything operates. More so, just like behind the scenes, walking around all the haulers and seeing those. But it's a lot to take in.
As a fan, what do you think the NFL can possibly take away? You see all the access that folks get. What is there anything the NFL can take away from that?
I don't really know. I feel like NFL does a good job, too, just engaging everybody. But it's how this whole setup is. It's just all kind of, like, new to me. It's a new experience. But it's awesome, really, to be a part of. Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun to do. They look like a blast to ride in. But just still in disbelief on it, just actually seeing just how all like the parks kind of operate, and just it's cool. And if I ever get the opportunity, it'd be a blast to do.
The Lions website lists Cosby at 6'5 and 309 pounds. For the second straight year, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos is at the top of Forbes' ranking of the world's billionaires. Bezos increased his net worth to $131 billion, up $19 billion from last year. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, it's Joe Peters starting Real Estate Matters, and today is Tuesday, March 5th. I know that only because it's my ex-wife's birthday, and I wish her a happy birthday wherever she is. I know where she is. She's with my little daughter. We're going to talk Larry McEntee. Am I saying it right?
Yeah, McEntee.
McEntee, who's a home inspector but does so much more. I mean, he's really interesting, and his son's sitting here in a studio sort of observing or keeping his father awake. I'm not sure what the situation is. And we're going to talk about all of that. I just want to sort of timestamp where we're at. It is today is Tuesday, the 5th of March. It's a little after 4 o'clock. We're in scenic downtown Flemington, and this is Joe Peters with Real Estate Matters. Before we get started, they asked me to do a few commercials, including the Weber, so I'm going to do that, and we'll be right back.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunter In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunter In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So here's a scientific weather format coming right off Android Central. It is outside right now on the cold side. I would say it says it's going to be 14 tonight. I'm trying to figure out what it is today. Right now it's 30. That's what I would have guessed. So it's going to be 30 today, 22 or so this evening. Let me get back to the previous screen. And it's going to warm up as the week goes on. 14 tonight, and tomorrow is going to be 25, and it's going to be 9 overnight, cold at night, following day 31, 12 degrees overnight. So nights are cold, then we're going to be 35 on Friday, and from there on it's warm city. We'll have swimming suits on by Sunday. I don't see any precipitation, a little bit of clouds, but I think this, hopefully, knock on wood, the snow is behind us. So I've got one more intro commercial, and then I'm going to play my introduction so I don't have to tell you all about me.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So now you know all about me. Larry, do you have a commercial on the station?
No,
yet?
Not
okay,
yet.
Okay, so why don't you do a little commercial about yourself? Introduce yourself and your company.
Okay, my name is Larry McAtee. I'm from Home Team Inspection Service. We're a national company, but it's a wholly owned franchise in northwestern New Jersey here. I cover basically Morris County, Hunterdon, Warren, and Somerset. We do the inspections for the home buyers, the typical real estate inspections, but quite popular lately is seller's inspections. People doing inspections on a home, they're getting ready to sell to make sure they can bring it up to date. I spent 30 years in sales, in technology, and in construction. I started in construction with Atlantic Construction. Actually, I was part of the team that built Beaverbrook and Hunter's Crossing here in Hunterdon County. And then spend a lot of years on the road, and then purchase my franchise.
Wow, you don't look old enough to be 30 years in business. So good for you.
Well, I appreciate
you
that.
It's kept you. I look old enough to be dead. So you know, I think age is sort of an interesting thing because we used to get to 65 and retire, and like 7 or 8 years later, it's over. And now we get to, I'm in my 70s. I'm still going strong. I have no interest in quitting. I'm like the Energizer Buddy. If I ever fall over and a battery falls out, that's it. That's the way I want to go out. I love it. I love working with people. My background has been technology as well. I worked for SAP and Oracle selling high-end software to the retail industry. And then got too many of these gray things, and people don't want you anymore. I mean, they have a hard way of telling you. You just don't fit the image. You don't get the offers, whatever it is. So I got into real estate full-time about 12 or 15 years ago, and I was doing it part-time as an investor. So I know we're going to crisscross a lot with what you do and what I do. I know a lot about the inspection game. Because I've sold 300 or 400 houses, and every one of them has been inspected, whether it was my listing or my purchase side transaction. What makes you different? First of all, let's get a phone number for you, too, Larry.
Okay. 973. I'm going to have to look it up to tell you the truth.
Okay.
What makes me different? I'll give you the. I believe my philosophy is comfort to close. By the time I get involved with the inspection with a home buyer, is they've seen 20 houses, they put an offer and acceptance in, they've been through attorney review,
right?
They've done all that, and they want the house. So my job is to basically educate them about the house. I really want them to buy the house in a sense, because if they really want it, but I want them to know what they're buying,
right?
And that's the key. I mean, it's comfort to close. It's not that there's problems with the house, because. I think every house I've ever inspected, whether it's a brand new house or a 180-year-old house, they've had issues, things that they should know about, things that you want to know about. But that doesn't mean it shouldn't be purchased.
Yep.
And that's where the value comes in, and that's where the agent comes in. I tell everybody my best inspection tool is a good real estate agent, because if they've had that discussion with the buyer, the condition of the house and what is acceptable, what's not, and what they should look for, then when I find things, it shouldn't be a problem unless I find something that's hidden and I'm happy to find those hidden things, because that's what people pay you for, in a sense.
And I think I tell my people in advance, your inspector is going to find a lot of things that is for FYI. It's for future consideration. If at the end of the inspection you do not want the house, just ask for everything's on a list and the deal will be canceled. If you do want the house, don't do that, because the deal is going to be canceled. It's not intended for that. And a lot of times you've been told, like, well, you know, the hot water heater's 12 years old, it's nearing end of life, but it's still working. Okay, you may want to get a warranty on it. Or the furnace is 24 years old, average life on furnace is somewhere around 20 to 30 years. It's still functioning, but they're not going to replace. Nobody replaces things that are still working. So
I try not to age things too well, in the sense that, because I did a boiler the other day, it was 42 years old.
Right.
But it was a boiler still working, still in good condition. Efficiency was still there. It was a hot water steam boiler. So how do you tell them, you know, now next week it could blow.
Right.
And next week if it breaks, it may be better to replace it because energy efficient and everything else. But, you know, and some people want me to find things and write them up so they can negotiate. And that's not what we do. A good home inspector has allegiance to the home, in a sense, to tell the story of the house.
Right.
We don't create the story. We don't emphasize the story. We just do it. Part of the inspection, you know, we do the inspection for the buyer, and when we're walking through, we'll discuss things that will never make my report. Things like small things, a step hazard or something like that, that's not a real problem, but I see they have small children. Maybe they want to get a railing that's closer together than 4 inches. Old railings have 6-inch gaps. New standards are 4-inch.
Right.
So we talk about those things. It's not a defect. It's not something the home buyer, the seller's going to fix, but it's something that you may want to know about.
And by code, it may need to be fixed today. So it depends on the age.
Well,
the
code, typically they don't bring houses up to code when you sell them. I mean, I keep telling people think you're an inspector that you're going to bring the house up to code, but I don't do a code inspection because, I mean, especially here in Huntington, you can have a house that's 80 years old and has 15 levels of code in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it still has knob and tube wiring. That doesn't mean it's illegal. It means that you might want to fix it, you might want to replace it, but doesn't mean that the code official is going to come in and close your house down.
Well, I just had a fellow, we listed a 1987 condo townhouse over in, where we were talking about, Concord Ridge.
Concord Ridge.
And the guy says, he was filling out the seller's disclosure, which is what a seller fills out, and he tells you everything he knows about the house since he's been there. And he says, what's knob and tube? I said, you don't have knob and tube. Okay, you got to be back to the 20s or 30s to have knob and tube. To my understanding, in most cases, it does have to be replaced, but it depends on the town that you're in.
May have to be replaced by the mortgage and your insurance company. Those things drive it more than that.
Right.
But even if it's been replaced, one thing that an electrician we had on a show a couple of weeks ago told us, between the first and second floor, a lot of times, even if it's been replaced, you'll find it, because to get to it, you have to rip the whole ceiling out. And if you have plaster ceilings, you're not going to do it.
So they pigtailed it.
They pigtailed it on both ends. So
My
advice to home buyers is, if you're doing any renovation work and you open the wall and you see a wire that you're not sure, act like it's live until you know better.
Oh, yeah.
Because even though it may be live, it may be connected. And again, it's like anything else. It's not a problem unless you don't know how to handle it.
Right. I find there's really a couple of kinds of inspections. You go in and they'll find two or three things that you want to get refixed. And then you get about three or four to negotiating points. You get about two dozen that are an FYI kind of thing. I find that buyers will be pretty open-minded, and sellers are pretty closed-minded. The seller is like, my house is perfect. There's nothing wrong. I said, no, I guarantee you we're going to find two or three things. Get ready for it. I tell my sellers, put a 0.5% aside. So if you're selling a $200,000 house, that's $1,000 towards inspection items. I'll guarantee it is a GFI or a spigot that doesn't work or whatever. And if you don't have to spend it, that's great. If you've got a septic, put a whole percent aside. And depends on the age of the septic, you may be replacing that puppy. I'm working on a house in Somerset right now. We've redone the oil tank. That's what is up 7 o'clock this morning doing an inspection on. We had to do the radon. We had to clean the thing out. It was pack ratted. The poor guy passed and all his life was in the house. And now we're going through the septic thing. And just getting a septic approval takes months on end.
Well, you know, we pride ourselves on one call does it all in the sense that we'll arrange those other inspections.
Right.
Because most home inspectors won't do septic inspections. You have to be licensed separately. But then I see more deals come apart because of the septic system than anything else because it's such a large thing and it's such a fearful thing that people don't understand.
Yeah.
Just to promote my show, on Friday we're having a septic guy come in and talk about all things septic. And they're going to explain. Mike from CSI, Mike Aceto from CSI is coming in, and he's going to spend about an hour telling us about.
As they say in the business, he knows his shit.
Yes. Yeah, and he spends his day in
Can I say that on the radio?
He's got some great people, too. They're very courteous. They're very, you know, they take their shoes off. They're very nice with my
clients.
There's
some really good, and there's some I have a couple of guys I use that are really good. You know, if you don't know what you have, which a lot of times is the case, especially if it's a 150-year-old farm, he'll come out for $400, he'll dig it up, and he'll tell you what you have.
Yeah, well, they'll explain it to you because they're different. And over the last years, I've learned there's a lot of different septic systems.
But that may not necessarily be the guy you want to come in and replace it. He's just assessed what you have.
He doesn't do any repairs. No. See, that's one reason I like CSI is they don't do repairs. Not to say that not all guys that do it are bad, but
it's a check and balance.
There's nothing in it for him to find something wrong or to clear it.
Right,
and he's also passed ones that are on margin, and he tells the home buyer they're on margin, but it's going to pass. So you know, you may not be able to back out of that deal, but you better know that in the oncoming months you may have a septic issue.
Right. Yeah,
but that's one thing. I mean, you know, it's funny because people are scared of that, but that's what you're paying for. You're paying for people to look at those things. You spoke about oil tanks. I find lines sticking out of walls all the time. And that's a liability. Don't get me wrong. I'm proud when I find something that turns out to be real because that's what you're I'm protecting you from that. I had a house in Randolph that had two lines sticking out of the wall, and we found two tanks in the yard that the bank said weren't there. And then we found oil in the sump pump. So guess what? We have an oil problem, and we probably have a $150,000 cleanup.
Yeah.
That home buyer would have bought that headache if we hadn't found that.
We just got a no further action on this, and it took – we put a tank in the basement before winter so that we could keep the furnace running. We pulled the one out of the yard. All right, we got to put two truckloads of dirt in. Well, they put truckloads of dirt. They do the outside parameters. And they said, based on those tests, we have to do some more. And they did. They found water at the bottom of 10 feet, so that triggers something else. They had to come back and do bore tests into the water. Fortunately, if they did everything else, they did say, you're clear to go.
Right.
But there's this whole state protocol.
Well, you hit groundwater, it becomes a federal DEP cleanup.
Yeah.
And they get involved with groundwater because everybody wants to protect groundwater for obvious reasons.
Right.
You get in the groundwater and you have wells in the area, you're contaminating everybody's well. The water doesn't know property lines.
Right.
We're going to do a thing on oil tanks because they're so scared. There's things you can do automatically if you have one. It's like, if you have a line underneath your basement floor, have it disconnected and have the lines run above the basement floor because if they leak below the basement floor, you'll never know it till it hits the water.
Good advice.
If you have it in the it's raised above the floor, you'll see it.
Wow.
I mean, that's a simple thing to do, and they don't allow you to put them below the basement floors anymore.
When we get into real estate, we have condos that are – nothing's been built in the last 20 years. Everything's typically 20 years old. And we could go into another whole subject no matter why nothing's been built in the last 20 years. But – okay, you're doing a 20-year-old condo. You know air conditioner and furnace, if not replaced, are probably near edge. I tell my buyers, when you're buying a 20-year-old house, either everything should be replaced or you're going to wind up replacing everything really shortly. Windows, roof, furnace, air conditioner, hot water here is probably replaced twice already. But then we get into the houses that were built in the 70s, and you're on the edge. If you get to the late 60s, you got this aluminum wire thing you got to look for, and it's got to be pigtailed, I guess.
Right, but again, it can be treated. I grew up in a development with 990 homes and all of them aluminum wiring.
Oh, wow.
And you know why they were aluminum wiring? It's because in 1967 they had no copper because they were making so many bullets for Vietnam.
Yep.
So they used aluminum wiring. And there's nothing wrong with aluminum wiring. It's the handling of it in the mixture with copper. Because
it just sweats and compresses on the end.
Right, and it expands more than the copper does, and then you form a gap, and then it has an arc, and then the arc will heat up and cause a fire.
Then we back up and we get into the 50s and 40s, and now you're typically looking at old oil heat homes because they didn't really do a lot of natural gas. Even at the end of the 70s, early 80s, there was no natural gas. But you got oil heat. It could be radiators, probably not forced air, a whole different thing. And then beyond that, it's a wild card because I was in a house yesterday in Tewksbury, was a listing appointment. This house was easily 1700s, and they put an addition on the back. And he's saying, I think this is where the first house ended and the second house. Nobody knew. And I said, okay, so what did you do see you own the house? And did you have permits to do that? And yeah. And okay, so if that's the case, then the seller's clear. But there's still a little harder to expect, I should say, because there's some unknowns.
Well, time is a better inspector than all of us. I did a house on the Delaware River that was 165 years old. And it had a rubble foundation. And the owner wants the old house, wants the old look. It had a slate roof that was probably original.
Yeah.
Brought a slate guy in just for that roof because, I mean, to replace that roof is probably $80,000.
Wow.
But the rubble foundation wasn't going anywhere. It was there for 160 years. What you worry about is if you see any dramatic movement. I tell people cracks in basements are like moles. You take a picture of it and look at it a year from now.
Right.
If it's drastically different, call a structural engineer.
Yeah.
If it's not, it's probably going to be there for 20 years from now. It'll probably be here 50 years after you're
out. This is probably not a house that was built with cinder blocks. This was built with field stones.
No, it was rubble. I mean,
rubble.
It was loose stone packed in with
dirt.
And it was three stories, and it was a beautiful house. So, I mean, you know, it is the age of the house. I mean, if you have a brand-new house, and you have lots of cracks in the foundation, yeah, maybe raise concern. I did a house in South Amboy yesterday that, you know, it was built on pier and post. You know what pier and post is? It's a cabin like, and it's just posts. And underneath the house was wide open at one point.
Okay.
And then they just dug walls and put walls up.
Right.
Now, there's no foundation because the house is resting on the piers.
Yep.
And the foundation is cracked in a lot of places, but it's not supporting the house. The piers are. So you got to know that, and you got to take the panic out of people. I mean, it's been there for 100 years. The house was 99 years old. It's going to be there more.
Yeah.
And
it's not like they stopped doing it. My daughter lives at the other end of Sarahville in South River, and her house was lost in a flood.
Sure.
And she now has a brand new house.
14 feet. Well, that's a little different. Those are pylons.
Yeah. Okay.
Piers are basically like deck. They're like brick columns that are set in a foundation.
Yeah. But it's wood, I believe.
Yeah. No. They don't have to be wood. These were brick and mortar.
Okay.
But they were set. They were like porch columns.
The last
columns.
Time I was there, they had enclosed it, made a room out of the bottom, and it's like, okay, the next person, you know, 10 years down, it's
well,
gonna be,
yeah. But the room down there is a throwaway room because if you have a flood, it's made to be destroyed,
right.
and you just clean it out and rebuild it.
We used to call on David's Bridal in Conshohocken, which is just outside of Philly. And it was on one of the tributaries of the main river there.
Schuylkill.
That's it.
I know Conshohocken well.
And it was an old prison. But the basement floor was where they put the prisoners when the flood came in because they all drowned and they had to clean house. I said, oh, my God. It's a horrible story, but it's Civil War cleaning the prison out.
Wow. Wow. You know, it's funny because you'll have this house had a dirt floor. The one in the Delaware River had a dirt floor.
Yeah.
And then it had an 8-foot deep cistern where the roof water was collected and dumped in air, and that's what they used to in the house.
Wow.
Now, the cistern wasn't working. It wasn't full of water, but in the middle of the basement, you have this 8-foot brick pit.
Yeah.
And you got small kids. Guess what? You want to secure that. I look for three things when we do inspections. One, heartache. Things that are going to cause you heartache, things that you don't know about, like a 20-year-old furnace or a hot water heater that's on its last legs, bad plumbing, bad electrical work. Then I look for things that are going to cost you money.
Yep.
Things that are going to cost. In New Jersey, they don't allow us to put a dollar figure on it. Most states, it's $1,000 or more. In New Jersey, it's anything that substantially affects the value of the property. And then the third thing is your safety. You know, your front stoop may not require a railing for code, but if it's a small stoop and a door opens on it and there's not much room to stand, you may want to put a railing on it. Because when the postman or the UPS guy falls off and breaks his ankle in the snow the other night, he's going to sue you. Yep. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's code or not. If it's going to expose you to something like that, I'll tell you. Maybe you want to look at a railing.
I find our code gets into some ridiculous things like handrails for seniors on porches and decks. Right. And what I said, give me a break. And the Clinton Township, I know, has a 4-inch baluster rule.
Right.
So if you've put up decking and it's 5 or 6, you got to redo it when you go to sell the damn thing.
Well, yeah, the four inch rule is for the size of a head for a small child.
Right.
But the thing you're talking about, the grass bubble railing, which is big, because a lot of decks have a 2x4 or 2x6 on the top.
Yeah.
It's not a grass bubble railing. A grass bubble railing is a 2x3 round tube that you can actually grab with your hand. And some of that's logic. And since you're falling down the stairs and you go to grab it and it's a 2x6, you're not grabbing anything. You're going down.
Yeah.
You grab a thing you can put your hand around, you might be able to save yourself from falling.
Right.
So, and a lot of times it can be retrofitted. I mean, again, usually code doesn't affect when you sell it. It affects when you do substantial work. If you refinish the deck, you got to bring it to code.
Right.
For instance, kitchens. Everybody says to me, oh, my kitchen doesn't have GFCIs. It should have them, but it doesn't. If it's 25 years old, it doesn't have them.
Right.
Now, if you do work in the kitchen and you touch the electrical work, they're going to make you bring it up to code.
Yeah.
If you don't do anything work in the kitchen, if your kitchen's still 1967.
But I'll tell you what we find as a nuisance. And I'm on the board of the 100 in Somerset. We just merged with Mercer at this point in time. And the instructors come in and say, yeah, but GFCI is $10. I says, yeah, it is. You're right. But it's $100 to get somebody to show up. By the time he leaves, it's $250 for something that doesn't really need to be done. You know, I agree that we should have GFCIs. It's a great safety, but half of them aren't put in right anyway. And to put that down in a report when you know code says this house doesn't have it does nothing but cause realtors a hardship.
But on the other side, if I don't put it down and the person gets electrocuted, then they turn around and sue me.
Yeah.
So some of the language that produces in our software is written by lawyers. Unfortunately, it protects us. So, to some degree.
So what we do in inspections is we say if it's going to need it to pass code, we'll do it.
Well,
I just had a fire door for a basement, same way. I need a metal fire door. If we need it to pass code, we'll put it in.
Well, and tell you the truth, I find a lot of houses don't. I mean, a lot of houses, they don't even sheetrock the garage.
Right.
Now, I'm an ex-fireman. You know, how many calls I've been on? I've probably been a dozen in my lifetime that called in as a car fire. Only to roll up and find out the car's on fire, but it's in the garage.
Yeah,
that's not a car fire. That's a house fire.
Yeah.
And if you don't have sheetrock in the garage, the house is probably involved.
Right.
So, I mean, I do houses that don't have sheetrock.
And
now,
even vents have to be sheetrock now because it can go through the vent.
Well, and you shouldn't have vents in the garage.
Yeah.
I mean, people have heating vents in the garage, and guess what? Carbon monoxide travels.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't make people bring it up to code because most towns don't have a CO requirement. The only inspection they do when you change ownership is a fire extinguisher, smoke detector, and carbon monoxide detector, which, by the way, January 1st changed. If you have battery-operated smoke detectors in your house today and you're selling, you have to replace them all with 10-year sealed batteries. No longer is a 9-volt battery smoke detector legal in the state of New Jersey.
It can still be battery, but it has to be 10-year sealed battery.
They have to be 10-year sealed batteries, no more 9 volts.
But they're not daisy chain, they're not electric.
If they're electric, you can have a 9-volt backup.
Yeah.
But if it's only a battery-operated device, it has to be less than 10 years old, and it has to be a sealed lithium battery.
Wow.
And so they've changed that, and they also upgraded the extinguisher requirement. There was talk about eliminating the extinguishers because
Christie never signed it.
Yeah, but because people were fighting fires with extinguishers, and that's not what an extinguisher is for. An extinguisher is to get you out.
Yep.
Not for you to become a fireman.
Right.
Call 911 and get out.
And
use the extinguisher on the way out if you need it, but. Don't play fireman.
So what did they upgrade it to?
It's like a 2AB or something. I mean, it's a different rating. It has to be a little bit bigger. But, you know, they make you hang it on the wall in the kitchen, and what's the first thing people do when they move in? They take the extinguisher off the wall and put it underneath the sink.
Yeah.
So there's some requirements that are sort of antiquated, I think. But the smoke alarms, carbon monoxide, people have enough of them. Have one in every bedroom. They're cheap enough, and they're the simplest thing that will save a life.
I agree. And it's almost like there was a movie that, the thing kept going off, and they finally unplugged it. And the next day was the fuse setting it off, so they'd unplug it so they could knock the place off. It's telling you something. You know, sometimes the CO2s get dust in them, and they have a 10-year life. But don't ignore those damn things. They're there for a reason.
Yeah, and replace the batteries if you've got one still. I mean, they're good for up to 10 years. And if they're 10 years or older, yeah, they still work, and they probably still will work. But they recommend you replace them because the little device inside, it's radioactive, and you have to dispose of that, by the way. You don't throw that out in your trash. You don't take that to the county hazmat because there's a little bit of radioactive material in each smoke detector.
So let's talk about pre-listing inspection.
Sure.
That's getting to be a bigger thing today because that way you can walk into your sale with a lot more confidence. How do you do a pre – how does that differ from a I'm going to buy the house inspection?
Well, in New Jersey it doesn't because in New Jersey our standards and practice make us do a – if we take a fee, we're supposed to do a full inspection.
Okay.
Now we can eliminate things if they're in a pre-inspection agreement. Like we can say we're not going to do the kitchen appliances, but they have to sign off on that. Otherwise, you're doing a full inspection.
Okay.
You're also producing a written report. In some states, you can do it as a low cost and walk through with the buyer and just point out things.
Yeah.
In New Jersey, they make us do a full inspection, which – good and bad, I guess, because the idea is to protect us. At the same time, it does cost people more money. But I do it for a little bit less because there's the difference. The homeowner is going to tell me what went wrong with the house. They're going to tell me they had a leak in the ceiling. Yep. They're going to tell me they replaced the furnace or the furnace had a problem. They're going to tell me they had a leak, a flooded basement 10 years ago. So it's more or less diagnostic work and more.
So the perfect listing for me is somebody who gets it appraised so we don't have to argue about price and gets it inspected so we know what we need to fix. And so, yeah, something will still come up, but you've fixed 98% of it.
Right. Agents like the pre-inspection with clients that don't want to fix anything, that think the house is perfect.
Right.
Because when I produce a report and they see it in writing, then it's not the agent, the one telling them they have to fix something. Because you know it's going to be discovered. There is a downside to pre-inspection agreement because it becomes part of disclosure. So if I do find something wrong, a leaky pipe or something, you can't claim you didn't know about it.
What does it cost, round numbers, for a pre-inspection?
Well, people can charge different amounts, but it's about 20% cheaper. So, I mean, an average house, a 2,100-square-foot house, can cost $400 for an inspection. I would charge like $300 for a pre-inspection. But some people want the radon at that time, or they want the WDO, which is your wood-destroying organisms. But not everybody gets all of that. And so it's a pretty comprehensive thing, but it's not perfect either. And I guarantee you any inspector that goes in after me may find something I missed.
They used to say take your car to 21 different inspection stations in New Jersey. Right. You'll get 27 different results.
Right.
Inspections are the same way. It's in the eyes of the inspector, and sometimes it's the buyer's asking questions and he checks it and whatever. But usually the inspector's going to lead the buyer.
And I try not to lead the buyer. I try to really tell them the story. I mean, but do I approach it differently? If I do a contractor, is my inspection a little bit different than it is a new home buyer, a young couple that never bought a house before?
Right.
Sure, it is.
Should be. It's a learning experience.
But I'm hoping the seller's agent also, the buyer's agent's there to help me too because they know the people a lot better than I do. I meet them for 3 hours. You've probably spent a good day with them at least, a 24-hour period at least.
So a pre-listing inspection, we're talking $300, maybe $400 on the outside.
Yeah.
And it gives you a good idea of what you should fix because anybody's going to find these things. It's worth their weight.
Well, put it this way. It doesn't guarantee you'll find everything, but the things we find probably will be discovered.
Right.
I mean, aging stuff, the leaks underneath bathroom sinks.
Yeah.
I mean, it always. I teach a course, by the way, and I'm certified now to teach a CEU course to real estate agents. It's called Inspection 101 and getting a house ready for inspection. And I teach sellers and agents, and then they get CEU credits for it too, which is a benefit for them.
Neat.
But it tells them what to do when they're preparing. Like, if you've had an oil tank removed, make sure you have the paperwork. If you had it certified and you had it inspected, put a copy of the paperwork, put it in a Ziploc bag, and tape it to the wall next to the furnace. If I'm going through the house and I see the copper lines in the wall and then I see the paperwork, there's no problem. But I'm telling you, I've seen couples who've seen they see the copper lines and they're looking at two houses. They're gone to the second house.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't want to deal with a possible oil thing.
Things keep getting grandfathered. I had a couple. Beautiful couple in her 80s, been in a house 41 years. The daughter, who I went through Leadership Summer Hunterdon together with, brought me into it. And they had a buried oil tank in 1998, and it was full of sand. It was 1,000 gallons. They said, I got all the paperwork. It's legal. I said, no, Not anymore.
Well, it's still legal, but nobody wants to buy it.
Can I get a mortgage with that under the ground?
I just did a house Saturday in Bergen County, 85 years old, and today they ripped out the tank, and the buyer sent me pictures of the tank coming out. They had to dig up the driveway.
Oh, yeah.
But they took the tank out. It was full of sand.
Right. Now we put 275s in it. They used to put 500, 800.
550 was the standard in New Jersey. And it was a program in the state. I had three tanks removed, my in-laws and my aunt and uncles, for $3,000. The state paid me to take it out of the ground.
That ended about 4 years ago.
Well, the program actually still exists, but there's no money in it because they took the money. I think they put it to Christie's plan. But, I mean, the oil companies were funding that per gallon.
Wow.
So they because oil is pretty safe. It's just that they didn't want it in the ground anymore. And it's funny. I took three tanks out. Two tanks, all three houses built within the same year of each other, all in the same neighborhood. Two of them looked like they were brand new, and the third one had leaks. Huh. It was only 12 inches of penetration, but it was about $40,000 to clean up.
It's a pretty safe assurance that even if there wasn't oil when they took it out, 20 years later,
there will be.
Pick it up underneath. They haven't checked. There's going to be some oil.
Well, that's why that's why people want the ones abandoned in place removed too, because nobody's ever drilled underneath them.
Right.
And nobody wants it. I mean, nobody wants that nightmare because you buy that liability, you know?
So I had an inspector on one time who wrote this picture book of funny things, like a vent right next to the intake to a fan, you know? What are some of the funny things you've seen?
The biggest things I see is plumbers love to cut joists. I mean, they put the new toilet in, they cut the joist in half, and they don't support it.
Oh.
And, you know, and the tub's on the same joist. And
so
you know, and you got to think of a tub with you know, 100 gallons of water.
Right.
A gallon of water weighs 8 pounds, and I know this because I'm a fireman, and I know how much water weighs. So you got 100 gallons of water, that's 800 pounds, plus now you get in it, and it's sitting on a joist that's not connected across the room.
Yeah.
You know, I point those out. They may be stable right now because the house is solid, but it should be boxed out and framed.
Right.
And people do their own electrical work and don't understand, you know, the hot screw. The black wire, the hot wire, has to go to the copper screw. And they reverse it, it still works, but the polarity is reversed, and you can cause electrical problems, especially today with all our chargers and our electronic devices.
Oh, it gets worse.
I mean, it gets worse. And when you see something like that, the biggest thing, also people add sinks to their basement, and it's not vented correctly, and they wonder why they have a smell, and it's because the trap is being dried out every time they flush the toilet.
Yeah, I was at a hotel in Vegas, and every time you flush the toilet, you got a smell out of the sink. I'm saying, give me another room.
Well, what's happening there is that toilet, the gallon of water is like a bullet, and it pulls the water out of the bottom of the trap.
Okay.
It's not vented correctly or adequately enough.
So,
I mean, the biggest, like, but electrician, I mean, I had an electrician on, and, you know, they go to school about 7 years before they can go on their own.
Right.
There's a reason they have 7 years of experience, because it's critical. It's a very simple system, electrical, but it's very complicated in a sense if you do it wrong. So the wiring is one. The electric boxes, I had one that was behind, like, they built a new room and you couldn't get to the circuit breaker box. I mean, you have to have 36 inches of clearance.
So when you call Home Team, and I've had this with others, some people do their own radon, some people do their own wood destroying. What do you do, and what do you use subcontractors for?
Well, I Home Team does a little different approach. We try to do it in teams, so we try to get in, because the things that we heard from people is they don't want an all-day inspection if they don't need it. And they also don't want an alarmist. So when you call Home Team, first of all, I have an office that the girls answer the phone, the women answer the phone, and they'll take the order and they'll arrange. We can do the radon, the WDO, and the house inspection, which is 90% of all inspections.
Right.
I do sub out the WDO. I bring a pest inspection on site. I bring a licensed company to do that. I do it for two reasons. One, you get a licensed pest inspector who does it every day.
Mm-hmm.
It frees me up for 20 minutes to not to be looking for termites and ants.
Right. And secondly, it makes it shorter.
It makes the whole time on site shorter.
Yeah.
And then the radon test I do, because I'm certified for that. I can drop the canister and pick it up in 2 days. But now if you need things like water, most home inspectors aren't licensed water testers.
Right.
We'll bring in a lab to do that. There's also a big difference between a water test and a pump test, and people in Hunterdon need to know the difference. You can have the best tasting water in the world, but if you only have 3 gallons of it, it's not going to do you a lot of good.
Right.
So sometimes we want to do a pump test, and that's a pump company that comes in, and they'll run the well for 4 hours and see how far the water table drops and how long it takes to refill, because if you have to drill a new well, that can be thousands of dollars.
Right.
And that's what we're trying to protect people from is buying that headache, because sometimes the homeowners, you know. I had a realtor tell me once that sellers don't lie, but they certainly don't have the best memories.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they know that the well is kind of sporadical, they're not going to tell you.
Hmm.
Because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to fix that well before they
sometimes leave. I remember one time my electric bill was out of sight, and I'm saying, I actually had my son, and we're on cell phones, and he was turning things off, turning them off, watching the meter from the outside to see what was causing it. We never figured it out. And about 6 months later, the well fund. And the first thing the well guy said, I bet your electric bill is through the roof.
Because the well was probably constantly running, right?
It was pumping into itself. The bottom 220 feet had this, what would you call it, cancer, and it was just pumping in and it kept running.
So it was just continually running all the time.
Yeah, and when a well is sort of binary, it either works or it doesn't. It doesn't start to go.
Right.
It just stops one day. You don't have any water. The biggest thing you can do is get 4 to 100-foot lengths and go to the neighbor and hook it reverse to their spigot so you have some water in the house. But you're dead no water without water in the house. And even in a bathtub, we had power outages twice in Clinton Township about 2 weeks ago. It had nothing to do with the wind or trees. We just, 2 nights at 5 o'clock, the power went out. And first thing I do when the power goes out and I have city water is I fill a tub full of water. I never fill a tub full of water. And it was going through my head is how much weight am I putting where we never use the tub. We always shower.
Right. So, well, you use the tub to flush the toilets, but I tell you what, people don't realize if you have a water heater, like I have an electric water heater, it's 80 gallons of fresh water.
Okay.
Power goes out. You have 80 gallons of bottled water in your house.
Interesting.
You can always get it out because it's a gravity drain. You just open the bottom drain and drain it into a bucket. Now, that's fresh water. It's not. You can drink that.
Hey, folks, that's a $1 million tip. You heard that here first.
Right. Your water heater is a big source of water. So, you lose power and you don't have water or city water or pump well water. You do have 80 gallons or 50 gallons, depending on the size of your tank. I mean, some people.
Because water gets pumped from a central station, so there's pressure. May not be as much as it once was, but you're going to turn it on.
Yeah, city water is pretty reliable. That's why your bypass pumps on your some pumps are usually city water because they have backup generators. The reason why they have to have it because they have to keep the hydrants pressurized. Yeah. I mean, the last thing you want is a power failure and then have no hydrant pressure. That's disastrous.
Tip of the week, hot water heater for 80 gallons more water.
The one thing you mentioned about that I see that it scares me the most is elevated decks. People think they can build a deck and it's easy and it's outside the house so it doesn't need the same kind of thorough inspection. I had a deck the other day where the hangers were all on with sheetrock screws. Sheetrock screws have no vertical shear strength. I mean, they rust and the heads pop off.
It's a snap. It's a white metal kind of.
Have you ever seen it snap when you do sheetrock?
Yeah.
They snap. Half of them snap when you're putting them in. And all the hangers were done with that. Now, by code, the hangers are supposed to be done with special nails that are they're short, they're very thick.
Or bolts.
Well, no. I'm talking about the hangers themselves. They're actually supposed to be done with these nails, and every hole has to be filled. You know, the hangers have 10 holes in them or 8 holes in them. Yeah. They're all supposed to be filled. You're not supposed to pick and choose which ones you fill. And I tell people, decks don't fail one board at a time. They fail catastrophically.
Yes.
They don't fail when you have 6 people on the deck. They fail when you have your kid's first birthday and there's 20 people out there and they're all singing happy birthday and swaying at the same time. When the screws break, then the whole deck comes down. I'm very thorough on decks because I want people to know the risks there, especially the higher they get off the ground.
Yeah, you go out and get yourself a contractor and he's going to put a deck in. He should know what he's doing. And the only way to understand if he knows what he's doing is to check his references.
Sure.
And then I see these ads for, I don't know what the thing is, because it's free. It's like, that's the last reason in the world you'd use something because it was free. But it's on the TV every night. You probably see it 4 times between supper and you go to bed. And I'm not knocking the service, but you don't want to use something because it's free. You want to use something because they have references. And references usually will tell you whether or not the company is good or not.
Usually. But I find that it's funny because there's different crews. I mean, you can hire a roofer and get a great crew, and you get a great roof.
Yeah.
You get a crew that may be not so good, your roof's not so good, even though the company may be good. That's why it's always good to have somebody, whether it's a paid inspector or it's somebody who knows construction, to look it over. There's basic things. There's a few things to look for, like you said, like the sill plate. Is the joist? Is it flashed against the house? It's not a problem today, but 6 years from now, when the water rots through the.
So, what are the biggest things you're starting to see now that we weren't seeing a couple of years ago?
Truss construction. A lot of houses are built from trusses.
Yeah.
People think you can cut through a truss just like you do a joist and run an extra wire.
Let's define a truss. That means it's prefabbed.
It's prefabbed. It's usually thinner.
Yeah.
A 2x6 rafter in your attic, if one of them becomes compromised, the ones on each side are still good, so you can still walk on the roof. A truss construction is designed that all the trusses work in conjunction with each other, so if one's compromised, it can compromise the whole roof. People in the condos, they'll put staircases in their attics, and then they'll cut the joist, they'll cut the A-frame of the truss and put down plywood so they can store things up there. But meanwhile, you compromise your roof and in your structure because the, the truss is designed to support the snow weight from outside, not from inside.
Right.
So when I see trusses, and the other thing is there are trusses like I-beams and engineered lumber. In the basement, it's a piece of plywood with two by fours on each end, and it's like it looks like an I-beam, but it's really plywood. They have pre-refrigerated holes for you run wires. You can pump them out to run a wire. But I have people who cut through that bottom joist, that bottom stringer. And if you do that, it compromises the joist. So those are things that we look for because those are catastrophic, and they shouldn't be. People like to put in temporary poles in the basement. Temporary poles are not legal for long term. They have to be put into a footing, and it has to be a fixed pole. If you're doing it to support the structure, you can't put a temporary pole in that you crank in there and
right, leave. And we call them lolly columns.
But yes, exactly.
You go buy a lolly column for $88 and put it in, and it solves the problem, but it's not legal. You need a $1,500 in the basement.
Well, it's got to, you know, to put that in, you can't put it on the cement floor because don't forget,
right,
basement floors are not structural. They're 3 inches of concrete that's sitting on gravel.
Yeah.
There's no footing to it. So, I mean, if that's truly supporting the structure.
That's why it's 15.
And the other thing I see is people think that, you know, they watch HGTV and they like this open concept and they think they can open any wall they want.
Oh, God, that's
and,
scary.
You know, you got to know what a load-bearing wall is. And,
yeah.
And it's not a, sometimes it's not so obvious because I've been in houses where it doesn't look like it's load-bearing because all the joists are running parallel to the wall, but then they change direction on that wall. So now that becomes a load-bearing wall. So.
So when people ask me, what do you think, could this wall come down? And I'm saying, I'm not going to guess. I think you should get an engineer and take a look at it, okay? Because we have engineers that will just do the work as far as design, tell you what you can and can't do, and then you'll have to go get an architect to draw the whole thing up and,
right.
And get it blessed.
Well, there's a couple of ways I tell them. Get a structural contractor because sometimes if it's just opening a wall, they know what they can do, and you don't need to pay an engineer the $500 to tell a guy what to do. He already knows. But a good contractor knows that if it's, you know, too bigger than he can handle. He needs a math equation.
Right.
Then he needs an architect or an engineer to figure out.
The biggest area that I see people wanting to open up right now is between the family room and the formal living room so that they can make them. And sometimes there's a duct. Sometimes it's just a wall. But I'm saying I can't answer that question.
Well, people really? In my neighborhood did that, and there's two ducts that go upstairs, and they cut them off, and now they're complaining that it's cold upstairs because they're not designed to, you
guess
know.
What?
And then those wires in there, too, that they have to make sure they rerun, and, you know. So, yeah, there's a big thing there. You know, the biggest nightmare in the home is water, though. And I tell people the biggest enemy to your house is water damage. You got to manage the water, and it starts outside with your leaders. You know, if you walk around your house and your leaders are not more than 4 feet from your house, go to Home Depot, buy the extension, and get the water 5 feet away. Get it running away from your foundation because even if you're on a slab, you don't want that water running back underneath your house.
A better built, newer home, something built in the last 25 years, should have an irrigation system around the foundation that runs the water off, but not all do.
Most don't. Most won't put dry wells in and stuff like that, and most don't need it, tell you the truth, because most of them are graded away from the house.
But even they, over time.
Yeah. Well, what happens is people put mulch and they put mulch and they put mulch and then all of a sudden
the worst thing.
And all of a sudden the mulch is higher than, you know, I had a house the other day where the
hazard after a while.
Well, the mulch was higher than the window well.
Yeah.
So guess what? The water was pouring right down into the window well. And but in water, guys, if you don't repair it, it doesn't stop. It just keeps coming.
Okay.
And it's not going to get better. It's not going to stay the same. It's just going to keep getting worse.
Water is the scariest thing. Other than electrical, I mean, that's pretty scary too. But water is the scariest thing because it can do some. It will do damage over there. And I'm pointing to the other side of the room, but it'll be coming from over here. And it's a bastard to figure out how it got over there.
And what comes over the water will come the dreaded mold. Will come the dreaded bugs and insects and mice because they need water to live. So what with moisture comes all those ugly things, dry rot, termites. You know, termites love moisture. That's why they go into the ground every night. They come up, they drink, eat the wood, and then they go back down. If they find nice wet wood, guess what? They don't have to go back down. They can keep eating.
There you go.
So, I mean, you know, I tell people water's your... In electric, you're right, but if they don't touch the electric, more than likely the electric's not going to break, but water's going to happen whether you want it to or not. And over time, you're going to have to manage water. You know, shingles have to be replaced. Flashing has to be fixed. Mm-hmm. Water will wear out the best flashing in a house. I mean, you've seen chimneys where it's got brand new flashing, and the reason is because over time it wore it out.
Yeah.
I mean, water's relentless. I mean... Think about erosion. The water created the Grand Canyon. What's it going to do to your roof? I mean,
well, and then get into the subject matter of solar panels. I want that less to a roof. Now, I was told in the last month that the newer solar panel technology will have the solar panel and the shingles. So anything that's adhered to the roof is old hat already, and it's just that people have done it and it still works and whatever. But you've screwed so many lag bolts through the shingle, into the roof, all over your roof. Each one of those is a place where a leak can start to occur if they...
The roof, you know, I tell people, you know, it's like skylights. There's only two kinds of skylights, those that leak and those that are going to leak.
Yeah.
You know, the perforations to the roof, the good companies make minimum penetrations, and they attach a rack that will, you know, so they'll have, every panel won't be screwed down.
Right.
They'll have a rack with minimum amount.
So
but you got to watch that.
You do bump into houses that have solar panels on them. What is it you tell your people?
Well, solar panels are outside the scope of a home inspection for a couple of reasons. One, there's like 50 different kinds and 50 different systems. The one thing I do tell them is get an electrician to overview the system, because when the power's off, you still have power in the house. And if you have a solar system and there's not stickers on your box that says solar system in place, make sure you get them, because when the power goes out and you think you go down and you start throwing switches, you may still have current in the house. And people don't understand that. It's like having a generator, you know. I mean,
because the first thing we run into it from a sales viewpoint is, do you own it or is it leased?
Yeah.
If it's leased, well, then either that has to be taken off or somebody has to assume your lease.
Right.
And they may not want to assume. They may not want it up there.
Well, secondly, and it's going to change. Like you said, the new technology is getting better every year.
Secondly is, there was a rule of thumb 5 years ago that 7.5 years or 90 months worth of payback. So if you're saving $200 a month because you have solar paneling, that's $18,000. We can add to the value of your house, and somebody should be willing to pay it, because instead of paying the $200, you're paying $5 for a connection charge. And it's wonderful. But the technology is moving too fast to consider. I almost say to a customer, first of all, if you can see it in the front, you don't want the house, because nobody else. So I put high tension wires in front of your house. Second, and okay, some houses face the front, and then you got to have sun in. If that's what you want, that's what you're going to do. But you're going to have a tough time selling the house. Secondly, what is the lifespan and what is the replacement value? Because you may save. Let's forget about houses and talk about a Tesla. If you haven't driven a Tesla, it's the ride of your life. You'll never want to drive a regular car again. I have a Corvette, and I love driving a Tesla. 100 miles an hour on an on-ramp.
I love that.
Yeah.
I drove that one time. It was like the best golf cart ever.
Oh, yeah. But what happens when the battery wears out? That thing is sitting on a battery the size of your cell phone. I mean, it looks like four wheels connected to a cell phone, and eventually Teslas will get 10 years. I'm not picking on Teslas. Electric cars will get 10 years old. We haven't got there yet. And what will the replacement value be? So I love the technology. I think it's a great thing. But I think replacement values, and this applies to stuff that's on your roof as well, sometimes is more expensive than the savings you've had.
Well, they do call the leading edge the bleeding edge, too.
Yes.
So, and there's a reason for that, because if you're the one that's going to be solar power and be the newest one, you're going to buy into obsolescence.
But in the last week, I've heard one of the leading forecasters in New Jersey say it will change so much in the next year, whatever you got is obsolete. So it's a caution. I'm not bad-mouthing the
soap. But don't you find it's like swimming pools? I mean, half the people want them and half the people don't.
Right.
And the same thing with solar. Some people are going to walk away from a house and some people are going to think,
Oh,
my God, I got a green footprint. I love it.
Well, what I would say to some, if you're thinking about putting solar in, is make sure you're going to live there for a while, because if you're trying to get the money back out, it's going to be difficult.
But as far as an inspection goes, my concern is that you understand what the system is.
Yep.
You get an education in it. You get a manual with it so you understand.
Yep.
Because you need to understand the systems in your house. And there's quite a few systems in your house, and you've got to know what each of them do.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I tell people, your home is part of your family. It will age with you. It will need care with you. It will need to go to the doctor. And you know, my whole show is about, you know, what systems to look at and when to call the experts.
Yeah.
You know, when to not do it yourself. Because there's a certain point where it comes to where it's cheaper to have the guy do it right than to have you spend 3 weeks doing it.
So let's reintroduce yourselves here. That's Larry McEntee,
Home Team Inspection Service, and that's one word. And you can reach my, you can, if you want to order an inspection, it's 973-527-3790. And if the office isn't open, it'll ring through to my cell. I gladly take questions.
Great.
And I don't mind if you have a question, send it along. And the email is lmcentee, it's lmcentee at hometeam.com.
And what counties do you cover once again?
I'll cover all of North Jersey, but I'm focused on Hunterdon, Warren, Somerset, and Morris.
Okay, so I do Hunterdon, Somerset, and I do a little bit of Middlesex where it touches. My office is in, you're saying Warren County versus Township.
Yeah, Warren County.
Warren County. I don't do too much up there. Once in a while, somebody wanders up there.
Well, I do Middlesex. I just did a house in South Amboy. And,
I'll
do anywhere in North Jersey. The only place I won't do is Bergen County, basically because I have a franchise there who's a mentor of mine, and he's a very bright man, but I refer him to you for you.
There you go. So he knows somebody who will. So this has been a very interesting conversation. I think we learned a lot about inspection. We learned a lot about how buying a house or selling a house fits into the inspection or vice versa. The best thing I can tell you is when I go to list a house, I talk up getting it appraised and getting it inspected so we know what we've got. I know high-end realtors that won't take a listing unless you do that. They just need to move inventory, and they're not going to slow things down while you argue about, no, that doesn't need to be fixed.
It costs everybody money if you go to closing and get hammered,
yeah.
And then it delays closing because of further inspections. I mean, had one the other day where I found a mold-like material. It turned out to be mold, so now it's going to be delayed another 6 weeks because they're going to do mold remediation. And I don't, you know, and people think inspectors love that. I don't like finding things wrong. And my report's a lot easier when I find everything right.
Right.
So think that, you know, don't think that everybody likes it wrong. We like you to sell houses. We like people to buy houses, but we want them to understand what they're buying.
Well, Larry, I appreciate you coming on. This is Joe Peters again, and we'll be back next week. I'm going to do my monthly report next week so you understand what's happening in Hunterdon and Somerset County, not only why it's happening, what's happening, but why it's happening. And I will be speaking tomorrow morning at the Hunterdon North Leads Group if anybody wants to come out and hear what's happening firsthand. I appreciate you tuning in, and I'm going to play my commercial one more time, and we'll go to the news. Thanks again, Larry.
Thank you, John.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Alabama is under a state of emergency as rescue teams hunt for survivors of Sunday's deadly tornado. At least 23 people are dead and dozens are injured or unaccounted for. And Alabama Governor Kay Ivey says,
"We are a tight-knit community of people, and today each of us mourns the loss of life of our fellow Alabamians."
There will be no criminal charges in the shooting death of an unarmed black man by a Sacramento, California police officer.
Our investigation has concluded that no criminal charges against the officers involved in the shooting can be sustained.
That's California Attorney General Javier Becerra, who says that an independent investigation into the incident shows that the officers acted properly in their confrontation with the man. News out of the White House, FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb will be stepping down this month. This is USA Radio News.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE, 833-34-BIBLE.
Senators are looking into the controversy over vaccines and preventable outbreaks. At an open hearing today, Tennessee Republican Senator Lamar Alexander.
We know some Americans are hesitant about vaccines, so today I want to stress the importance of vaccines. Vaccines save lives.
A church in Bakersfield, California is offering ashes to go this Ash Wednesday. More from USA Radio Network's John Clemens.
Ash Wednesday opens Lent, a season of fasting and prayer leading up to Easter Sunday that falls on April 21st for 2019. Ash Wednesday comes from the ancient Jewish observance of paying penance. Officials at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Bakersfield, California say they understand the constraints of time many Americans live under. So Pastor Don Wilder will be on the street administering what are called ashes to go to the public. I'm John Clemens.
Follow us on Facebook at USA Radio. This is USA Radio News.